Well, folks, for today's culture segment, we get to introduce you to Josh Chen. Josh is actually a guy who's been with Crew for years. I'm not going to say years and years and years. That just makes him sound old. He's not old. But has served with Crew, knows young adults. And we're going to actually have a conversation today on sharing the gospel, but it's not what you think it is. This is about what does it look like, insights that he has gleaned from living, eating, breathing with millennials for a long time. So, Josh, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's great to be on here.
So you actually said, I was reading a little bit of your testimony, you actually grew up in church, officially being the president of your youth group. So that's pretty hardcore. After high school, walked away from your faith because you didn't see how it applied to your life. Now, that could be the storyline for any number of millennials out there, whether they are still in school, whether they are young professionals, whatever. In fact, I think your sister even was a missionary in China, and you just basically said, I don't want to be a Christian anymore. What did she say to that?
Well, she actually said something pretty surprising. She pulled out the old Revelation passages of, if you're lukewarm, then I'm about to spit you out of my mouth. And that's exactly what I told her I was. I was lukewarm. And so she goes, and I'm like, I can't be hot. And she goes, well, go cold, which was just, I look back and really bizarre thing, but really a God thing that she said, because I walked away and, in the midst of that, just had to wrestle with a lot of issues.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I want you to kind of talk a little bit about this idea of, yeah, I grew up in church, but I don't really believe it. Why is that so typical for a young adult generation? It seemed like, a couple generations ago, like our parents and grandparents, it was much more, of course I believe it, because this is what I was always taught. Why would I ever let go of that? Now it seems to be a complete shift. Where are we at?
Well, I think as I've been looking into millennials, I just realized that millennials are asking different questions than their parents were. A lot of what their parents were asking, it kind of came out of this worldview where, of course, God exists. Well, now we don't live in that same worldview in many places of the country. And so the questions they were asking were questions like, how do I get to heaven and what do I do with my guilt? Whereas with millennials, they're just asking different questions. They're asking questions more along the lines of, what does it mean to thrive as a human being? And so really, when we think about the gospel, we have to think of how does the gospel answers the longings and questions of every human heart. And really, when we think about the gospel, we have to think about how it does that. And when we communicate it to someone, what are the questions that they're asking? And a lot of how we present the gospel nowadays honestly answers a question of a different generation.
Yeah. Give us a couple examples of those types of questions. Like, what are considered valuable to millennials? What about the way they're living life makes certain questions right and others wrong?
It's interesting because we traditionally in missionary circles talk about how there's a guilt and innocence culture. There's a shame and honor culture, and how there's a fear and power culture. And traditionally, we talk about Westerners as having more of a guilt and innocence culture, whereas Eastern and Middle Eastern and different parts of the world have more of a shame and honor culture. And so when we talk about the shame and honor culture, you could probably tell by my last name that I'm Asian American. And I worked in Asian American ministry for 10 years, and we always talked about the gospel in light of shame and honor. And so when my wife spoke in front of a large group of people that were predominantly Westerner or, majority culture, she talked about it still in light of shame and honor. And people were coming, her staff and students were coming up to her and saying, you're putting language to things that I've felt all my life, but I haven't felt the gospel break into. And for me, that was an eye-opening moment. Like, okay, are we in the midst of a cultural shift? I think what's happening is that we're moving from a guilt and innocence culture to a shame and honor culture. And it doesn't look exactly the same as Eastern culture. In fact, there's some key differences because of the individualism of American culture versus more of the collective nature of Eastern and Middle Eastern cultures. And so, I just think that as we're making that shift, the gospel answers the questions of a shame and honor culture maybe a little bit differently than a guilt and innocence culture. And so I did this kind of test. The next time I spoke in front of a group, I just kind of threw this out there. I go, what sounds like the best news to you? Like, what sounds like the good news to you? A, Jesus Christ died for my sins, freeing me from hell and allowing me to go to heaven. B, Jesus Christ died to free me from my shame, to allow me to be who I was created to be. Or C, Jesus Christ defeated the principalities of the world, freeing it from its demonic oppression. And as you could probably tell, A is the guilt and innocence framework, B is the shame and honor framework, and C is the power and fear framework. 11 people said A, 21 said B, and 6 said C. And so the next time I did that in a smaller group, every single one of them said B, but all of them felt like they ought to have said A, because that is what we're traditionally told is the gospel.
So what would you say, like, knowing that you're talking to millennials, most of whom are sitting, you know, being taught by pastors who are probably boomers or, you know, maybe even older. So they're being told, okay, here, to share the gospel, go out and say, you know, if you were to die tonight, what would you have to do or say to get into heaven, you know, and that kind of stuff. You know, all the old school ways of doing that. And they're kind of like, yeah, what do I do with that? I don't know what. Give an example of what it would look like for just a friend to be having a conversation with a friend, a believer who's having a conversation with a friend who doesn't know Christ, and just, you know, what that could look like as far as how they treat them, like their actions, what they share from their own heart, how they can incorporate hope and scripture into that. Give us a picture of what that could look like, because I think we're so often in old constructs, even though young adults feel like, yeah, that for some reason this feels super awkward to me, but I don't know how to do it differently.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And it's something that I've had to wrestle with for the last 15 years. In fact, as I shared my own testimony over the course of 15 years of reflecting on my own testimony, I realized that I was sharing it in a way that didn't even resonate with myself, because I kind of fit it into the framework that I was told this is what works, and that was your conversion testimony. And my testimony is one of those testimonies that, like, a lot of people are like, oh, man, I wish I had a testimony like that, and it is kind of this radical experience. And yet it didn't even resonate with me, because I was trying to explain it in a way that showed that this is proof that God exists. And, in fact, what really resonated me was this idea that God was pursuing me and that he was affirming my inherent value. And because I already knew that God existed, honestly, I just was kind of fearful that he didn't want me. And so I like to tell millennials that we need to focus more on micro testimonies than our conversion testimony. And our conversion testimony is great, but it's more like, how does God affect my everyday life? And for people that are like, I don't like my testimony, well, this is good news for them, because now you can focus on how God's impacting your life right now and not necessarily how he initially brought you to faith.
Right. Which is great news for people like me who have the lamest conversion testimony ever. So, you know, yeah. I'm the one that was like, I think I accepted Christ at 5, and it just always seemed like he was there, you know, kind of that thing. So that's good. You know, you can kind of juxtapose the two of ours and be like, oh, man, Josh's is so awesome and mine's super lame. Yeah.
Yeah. And I know tons of people like that. But lately I've been focusing much more on my micro testimonies, which is like, how's God impacting my life right now, today? Mm-hmm. And so what I tell people is to listen to what people complain about, because in there they're looking for something, they're longing for something, they're finding life where there is no life, and when we can identify that, we can if we've experienced something similar, we can share our story. And so an example of that is, I remember this gal was like, man, I'm so stressed out at work. And I told her, oh, man, I feel for you because 6 months ago I felt the same way. And she was like, 6 months ago? Did something happen 6 months ago? I go, yeah, and then she was like, did your job get easier? I'm like, no, actually it got harder. She goes, well, what happened? I go, honestly, there's a Bible verse that popped into my head and it changed how I saw my present reality. And she goes, well, what was the Bible verse? And I go, well, it's this verse that says, but God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. And I told her, I had all this anxiety because I was speaking at these events, and I was just like, man, I feel like a fraud sometimes. I feel like I'm not the right person, that there's somebody better that could be speaking at these events. And I told her as I meditated on that passage, what I extrapolated out of it was that I'm inherently valuable. Because you could almost, you know, translate that verse, but God demonstrates his own value towards us in this. While we had nothing to offer, Jesus Christ made the permanent transformation into the God-man in order to pursue us to the point of death. And as I started to believe in this idea that I'm inherently valuable, my stress and my anxiety just melted away. And it wasn't even something that I was focused on. It was just this truth that God had dropped in my lap, and it impacted my life. A few months later, I overhear her talking with her friends, and she's like, man, I was so stressed out at work, and Josh told me this thing, and my anxiety just melted away. Hmm. And I think for me, what I realized was that, you know, why am I looking for, my anxiety comes from wanting to people please and kind of this fear of man. Because I look for my value in those things, and that's the lie, that my value comes from my performance. But as I started to believe in my own inherent value, I was freed up really to be who I was created to be, and live out of that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have been caring for my mom for over 2 years, and just 2 weeks ago now she went to be with the Lord, and it just reminded me how. So often I would be in conversations with friends, whether Christians or non-Christians, and they would just say, you know, oh, Lisa, it's just so amazing that you're caring for your mom, that you're doing all this. And I have the chance to say, you know what it is? It's super hard. It is super mm-hmm. hard, but it's something that God has asked me to do. And I'm able to share that because they're already saying, how do you do this? They're, you know, it's the implied question is, how in the world do you do this and not just be about yourself? Or how do you manage your life and do this? And so I got to include God in all of that. And then as she went to heaven to tell the story around that and all the ways that God was faithful over the 2+ years that I had her with me has been really cool. All right, I got to turn it around here because I have one more question for you, and that is on the concept of community, because I love what you say and the example you gave of a neighbor you talked to who went through a divorce and looked for community, and he found it. But tell us how, in his telling of it, you were kind of disappointed.
Yeah, and this is something that I think millennials long for at a core level is a sense of belonging. Much more so than any other generation. And I think part of that is not, we know about the social media thing and just kind of just not being able to quite feel like you fit in. And my neighbor, I'd been having conversations with my neighbor for years, shared the gospel with him, shared my testimony with him. My neighbor happened to be going through a divorce, and in the midst of that, I was talking to him and kind of sharing different things with him. And I kept saying, man, I need to have you over for dinner. Like we should grab a meal, or we should, grab some coffee. But I never really followed through on that because I just found myself busy or something would always come up. And he, later on, he told me, maybe a year later, he goes, I was going through this divorce, and it was the hardest thing that I've ever been through. And in the midst of it, I started salsa dancing, and I found community and belonging in that salsa dancing. And he goes, you know, it could have been anything. At that point, I was open to anything. Before that, I was totally against Christianity, but I was open to anything. And he goes, it could have been anything that I found that community in, but it just happened to be salsa dancing. And he, what's funny was he wasn't even saying it in a way that was like, you should have invited me to church, or you should have grabbed that coffee with me, or he was just sharing where he found belonging and community and how much it impacted his life. And he was just so happy that he had found this community, and so many people are going through that. And I think one of the key ways that we can be sharing our faith is to create spaces of belonging wherever we go. I think so often we're so worried about fitting in ourselves that we're looking for it, but we can't find it. And yet we have the opportunity to create spaces like that for people around us. And I think that's probably one of the most powerful ways that we can share our faith, I would say that's the foundation. You create spaces of belonging, and then you go from there into, speaking into people's lives.
Yeah. And that's so great, because that's something we all can do. We all run in circles in different, places, whether, at the gym or hobbies we're invested in or school. So I think that's a great place, something attainable for everyone and to allow us to speak out of our own lives. Well, folks, that is it. We are at the end of our conversation with Josh, but you can find him on Twitter, actually, at Josh N. Chen, and get more of his musings and, maybe even shoot him a note and be like, so, Josh, how are you living out your micro story and testimony today? maybe you can give them some ideas as well. So, Josh, we really appreciate you, your work with Crew, how you are pouring into the lives of young adults, and the insights that you've gained from that. So we appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.